It's March 28, 2003. Frankfurt, Germany. A brothel in the red light district. With a microphone.
Last year, Ultra Red had come to Frankfurt, Germany, to perform in the Paul New Music Festival. The performance was to be a collaboration between the Frankfurt chapter of the anti-racist network Kanaka Tech and the four members of Ultra Red. Also participating in the performance was an organizer of the local group Doña Carmen. This group provides legal and healthcare advocacy for Central American and Caribbean women, men, and transgender sex workers in Frankfurt's sex industry. The day prior to the performance, Doña Carmen invited Ultra Red to accompany them on site visits in the Red Light District. During the site visit, it became clear that Doña Carmen's approach is non-moralistic and sex positive. For Doña Carmen, the struggle for legalization of both sex workers and migrants is bound up in the recognition of sex work as a form of labor. The recognition of sex workers as legitimate labor force would have the effect to both legalize sex work and legalize the status of migrants who come to Germany to work. This strategy is marked by a larger struggle surrounding issues of sex trafficking. Trafficking is violent criminals distorting and preventing the notion of migration. Trafficking is something dark, frightening, and ugly. These are the words of Helga Konrad, the chair of the OSCE Task Force on Trafficking in Human Beings. For the OSCE, for the IOM, for the governments, sex trafficking is organized criminal networks that deceive and coerce women into illegal migration. The same networks, spreading all over Europe, keep and exploit women's labor in prostitution. The story of trafficking is then the story of criminals and its victims. But let's stop listening to the international organizations and governments, and let's start listening to women's voices. Feminist activists and scholars have shown us that women's stories offer a more complex and problematic perspective than the one we get from official sources. Feminists who work from the perspective of anti-racist and migrant struggles, such as European Network Next Generation, propose to modify the conceptual schemes starting from women's lives. When women's lives become the point of departure for understanding trafficking, the story of criminals and victims no longer stands. Its place is taken by women's migratory projects, by their desires to escape the conditions they live and work in, by the desire for new life opportunities. It becomes also a story of the impossibility to realize one's migratory projects alone. This is so because for those people who are not EU citizens, it's not possible to cross the borders when and how they wish. Visa, border, and migration regimes make it impossible to move freely across European space. However, traffickers can bring one to any desired destination. Yet, entering trafficking system means having little or no control over the terms of the travel. It means being dependent on the traffickers. Its consequence is that women are channeled into informal labor and confined to that space by the immigration laws. Having said this, let's ask ourselves how effective border and migration regimes are in preventing trafficking. What if, instead of preventing trafficking, the means of controlling the movement of people actually create the condition for its existence? What if existing immigration laws actually maintain and uphold the condition of enslavement, exploitation women face in prostitution? If so, then we urgently need to rethink trafficking and examine the role anti-trafficking policies play in sustaining trafficking. And perhaps we also need to abandon the term trafficking altogether, because its criminal victims' frame hides the active role women play in the process of migration.
Since 2001, the four members of Ultra Red have committed to focusing our performances on struggles of migration. To be a political organizer in Los Angeles, where Ultra Red is based, is to engage in immigrant struggle. Whether one is a housing activist, an organizer of grassroots education initiatives, a labor organizer, or an AIDS activist, the struggles of everyday life in LA are the struggles of migrants. Coming to Europe, particularly Germany, which is from the previous recording, we found this idea not to be the case, or at least not yet. For this reason, Ultra Red has been in the habit of saying to our German allies that we in Ultra Red come from your future. It is a future where migrant struggles not only permeate all political organizing, but where the very notion of what is political has been transformed. This will not be the first time people's struggles have changed the definitions of politics. Years ago, those of us, like myself, who were an AIDS activist and in the AIDS activist movement, we used to say that groups like ACT UP, the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power, such groups were unique in the left because we were made up of people directly impacted by HIV/AIDS. We were the people who were HIV positive, the people who had lost so many friends. We had lost our partners, a parent, our brothers, sisters, our children. In places like Los Angeles, death was so common, it seemed like an entire generation of gay men, as well as artists and others, were being threatened with oblivion. Meanwhile, the government and much of American society responded with nothing but fucking moralism and blame. We were going to be silent no more. We came together to fight the government and their criminal response, or lack thereof, the response that they had to the AIDS crisis, to fight the greed of drug industries who are more committed to profit than to lives. To fight AIDS was to fight for our very existence. We were angry, we were fed up, and we were in love with the sound of our voices in the streets. To be silent meant to be victims. It meant to be isolated. It meant to be powerless. No one came to us and said, "You people with HIV/AIDS, we're going to organize you." We did it ourselves. We were the people who the government and society at large considered expendable. We were the fags, the dykes, the junkies, the prisoners, the homeless people, the single moms, the immigrants, the Latinos, the African Americans, the artists, the freaks. And we raged gloriously together. We argued with each other. We sometimes bored each other. Sometimes fucked each other. We always challenged each other. And no one joined our movement because they had a theory, a project proposal, a grant, a political party, or a non-governmental organization. People joined the movement because they had been traumatized by this epidemic, and they were outraged by the government's moralism about sex and what we do with our bodies. This irreducible outrage transformed what politics meant. Today, the struggles of migrants are performing a similar transformation. Just like AIDS activism, the struggle of migrants occurs at the place where migrants themselves organize their lives. If we don't know migrant struggles, if we can't find them on the map, then our politics, our morality, and the borders around our imagination are in the way.
Kanakatak was founded in 1997. In the light of pogroms and ongoing everyday racism against migrants, during the 1990s, we released a manifesto. It begins like this. Kanakatak is a network of different people from diverse backgrounds who share a commitment to eradicate racism from German society. Kanakatak is not interested in questions about your passport or your heritage. In fact, it challenges questions about passports and heritages. For decades, migrant societies, organizations, and initiatives have existed that have criticized the socio-political situation and desperate living conditions for those denied full entrance into German society. Kanakatak distances itself against the definition of the political that naively suggests that all that is needed is dialogue and peaceful cohabitation of Kanaken and Germans via events like the Day of the Foreign Fellow Citizen, displays of folk music, and humanistic campaigns. When the weather is good and the conscience is bad, liberal Germans decorate their cars with stickers. "Foreigners, never leave us alone with the Germans." Kanakatak is not a friend of such multiculturalism where claims for integration and assimilation are inevitable. In this atmosphere, it was not German society that was examined, but the migrants themselves. "Of course, what migrants lack is tolerance," we were told. "And who does not want to adapt into the open society has no business in enlightened Germany." Yet, tolerance is being claimed from a dominant position that does not have to examine its own complicitness with subordination, and existing relations of dominations are being suppressed. This logic suggests that to talk openly about racism
will only cause more trouble and violence. Moreover, it could produce prejudice among the majority of Germans. We reject all of this. It's high time to stop asking about respect and tolerance without naming the political economic conditions of social inequality. Racism has to be challenged in all its forms, from individual discrimination to violent attacks. In autumn last year, along with more groups such as the sex worker self-organization Doña Carmen, we launched the Society for Legalization, an initiative demanding political and social rights for migrants with and without papers. The current regime of migration acknowledges that the politics of Fortress Europe has failed, while at the same time it upholds the fantasy that migration could be regulated, managed, and controlled. As a result, migration is being illegalized. Illegalization is a broad term that concerns not only those that are conventionally associated with the term, the undocumented migrants. Today, everybody who does not own a passport of the country he or she lives in is legal only under provision, provided he is not on welfare, provided he has a job, provided he is not sentenced to jail, provided his request for asylum is not rejected, provided his marriage is not denounced as only for documents, provided he does not work with a tourist visa, provided he is not suspected to be a terrorist, provided he is sufficiently integrated into German society. This list has no end. We are describing the obvious here. The laws regulating foreigners are producing illegal migrants. The borders managing movements are producing illegal migration. No matter if there are 500,000 or 1 million people in Germany or millions in Europe that are living without or with insufficient documents, no matter if it is 2 or 5 million people who voluntarily or involuntarily support them, we are among you. We don't talk about integration or about good or bad foreigners. We talk about collective rights. We talk about social and political rights to come true, and moreover, we talk about putting a right into place that is being acted out every day. As long as there will be borders, people will transgress them. The extent to which this happens on a daily basis, organized by networks of community and supporters, is what makes the autonomy of migration.
Is already an abuse to human rights, because if any immigrant is found here, let me say, if he or she is a refugee and he or she is here, it's because he or she is looking for someone to protect his or herself. And deporting the person back to a land where his or her life is being threatened is already a crime against humanity. And because of this, we have to use any means possible to see that we protect anybody who is under the threat of deportation. So the point is that the government knows very well that deportation is an abuse of human rights, and the government goes ahead using all forms of brutality to try to see that these people are deported into places where their lives are threatened. And now we have to come together as well to fight against such brutality.
Can you have a campaign against deportation without the immigrants being part of this campaign?
Actually, the campaign is coming from the immigrants. We are actually fighting as immigrants, because we have got so many weaknesses in other aspects when so many other people come to mess up the city. So what is happening, first of all, we try to build up ourselves, we create networks and we create bases, and that's a mobilization from under to see that we come out together, then we our supporters can come to give us the push. And that is what is happening. So we are coming together as we are here seated today here. We have all of us, almost all of us here are immigrants. And that is why we are fighting for this right to be recognized. We are not asking anybody to give us the right. We have the right. We need this right to be legalized and recognized. And we are asking anybody who is coming to join us in such a struggle that we need our rights to be recognized and legalized. We stand for total legalization and we stand for a defensive way to fight our rights and not a defensive way. We don't have to push the war, but we have to push the government to the war.
But who are the migrants in Serbia? Migration in former Yugoslavia was mainly shaped by emigration. While people from this region would migrate and settle elsewhere, recruitment contracts tried to get these movements under control. Having initiated the formation of the non-aligned countries, Yugoslavia was also a spot to which people from East Bloc countries would flee to demand asylum. It was a movement that was not public knowledge, as the wish to leave a real communist country was not supposed to exist. In the 90s, during the time of the war, refugees escaped to all parts of the country. others made their way to Germany, Sweden, Austria, where a temporary residence permission was granted for war refugees. In this region, more than 1 million people still live as refugees, while former Yugoslavian countries are among those topping the list whose citizens demand asylum in the EU. Former Yugoslavia became the gateway to Europe. People from countries like Afghanistan, Iraq, Armenia, or China would use the Balkan route to transit into Schengen EU. On 1st of May, the so-called eastward enlargement expanded Europe further to the east. Yesterday's borders became today's transit areas and tomorrow's scenes of immigration. Borders shifted and new spaces were created, border spaces. The new borders already cast their shadows far beyond that geographical line which is usually considered a border. This is so because the border has long since outgrown its topographical specificity. It has become flexible, no longer separating inside from outside with a supposed spatial precision, but rather mediated by an ever-growing space in between, interspersed with sequences of control posts. The border persists from within Europe, along the motorways, the traffic networks marked by admission and detention camps. Europe's borders, too, fray into a hazy space in between, the border's buffer zone. The EU calls upon its non-European neighbors to implement a harmonized border politics. Prospective accession countries like Croatia and Turkey concede to the demand, demonstrating that the EU's influence extends far beyond its actual territory. The Mediterranean Sea turns into a liquid border, increasingly incorporating the North African neighbor states as cooperating border guards. Last year, British Prime Minister Tony Blair suggested that admission camps be established for migrants in trouble spots outside Europe. This testifies to the increasingly far-reaching control fantasies of transnational politics. Blair's suggestion has just been picked up again as a topic by Germany's Minister of Interior, Otto Schily. In Serbia, all those people who are being caught without papers are being detained in Padinska Skela. Officially, there are only men being imprisoned for a maximum of 30 days in a separate part of the jail. This is when organizations like the UNHCR or the International Organization for Migration come into play. It is they that decide over asylum cases or organize so-called voluntary repatriation, while the Red Cross distributes telephone cards. Like other EU neighbors before it, Serbia is faced with a demand to harmonize its migration policies and tighten its border controls. As a result, a new asylum law is presently being drafted in Serbia. According to international timetables, the law was supposed to be implemented this past April, a year from Serbia's entry into the European Council. The policy is still being debated. But sometimes international timetables meet with their schedule merciless. In September 2002, 230,000 people in Germany lived with so-called Duldung, a temporary residence permission. Half of them coming from Serbia, Crna Gora, or from Kosovo. 60,000 of them being Roma, most of them being war refugees. In 1996, Germany and Yugoslavia signed a repatriation agreement. The plan was to return 10,000 refugees per year. Although this agreement was suspended in 1998 due to the EU embargo, it was immediately renewed in 2001 when the new government in Yugoslavia came into power. Otto Schily argued that this, finally, would help to fight illegal migration from the Balkan region, and that the Serbian government made a big step in the direction of Europe. Taking this process into account, should we really talk about Fortress Europe? If the migrants experience their residency states as precarious, just as precarious are the mechanisms of regulation. In fact, the implementation of migration regime would have to be described as a reaction rather than an action against migratory movement. Migration resists the efforts of being regulated. Migration regulation is never able to wholly fulfill its own standards of control. The often life-threatening effects of border regulation on the dangerous route over rough terrain and across guarded borders turn into something new: the chance for a better life. If the EU accession process requires implementation of a migration regime, and moreover, if those requirements serve as the fundamental condition of accession, what happens in a country like Serbia, where one-third of the population lives below the poverty line? Who are the migrants that are already being affected by such policies and that such policies respond to?
Thank you.
Block 17, Novi Beograd, is a place where the margins organize a tenuous possibility, where proximity has yet to produce familiarity. The market is a large two-floor structure that hosts more than 300 shops. The bargain goods range from clothing to kitchen utensils. Any day of the week you go there, you'll be engulfed by shoppers, clerks, and merchants. The market at Block 70 is a busy place inhabited by various groups of people. Local Serbian people, mostly women, work as sales employees in the shops. They also work in Chinese restaurants, chopping the vegetables and delivering food to the shops next door. They work from 9 to 6 or from 6 to 4 every day of the week for 300 dinars a day. Some of them have been laid off from previous jobs and found themselves in Block 70. Some, especially young women, could not find work elsewhere and opted for Block 70. Others come and go, working here and there. Block 70 hosts a large number of Roma people. A part of them have arrived to Serbia only recently after being deported from Germany. In Germany, they had a temporary residency that had to be renewed every 3 months. To be forcibly removed from Germany, to be picked up by the police at 6 in the morning with no time to pack, to be put in the van to be returned to the airport, to flown out of the country hours later. Return to Germany denied for 4 years. The alternative, called voluntary return, happens after social benefits have been cut off or the work permit has been suspended. It means to have 2 weeks to pack one's belongings. It is possible to return to Germany, but only for a holiday or a short visit. Some of the Roma were deported to Serbia, Montenegro, and Kosovo after a 7-month-long struggle. In April 2002, Roma organized a caravan of protest throughout Germany. They occupied a public square in Düsseldorf from July to December 2002. Several demonstrations and hunger strikes were organized. After police raids, Romas occupied offices in the Socialist and Socialist Democratic Party. While the deportation class flights to Pristina three times a week, on their ways, Roma demanded their immediate stop. And they demanded their right to stay in Germany. Finding a low-paid job in Block 70 is of little consolation for those who have spent the last 12 years of their lives in Germany. For those who planned to live there, fall in love there. In Serbia, they are foreigners. In Serbia, some of them don't even speak the language. In Serbia, they cannot continue their education and training. Chinese nationals run the shops in Block 70. They cannot own property. They cannot buy a flat or a shop. They have to negotiate with Serbians' owners to rent a shop. The small shop costs between 200 and 3,000 euros a month. Chinese people are granted between 3 to 6 months resident permits that can only be prolonged for another 3 to 6 months. In the past, especially in the 90s, Chinese people were granted permission to stay longer than 6 months, sometimes up to 2 years. Today, the renewal of one's temporary residency is dependent on the amount of taxes paid, but it is rarely extended for more than 6 months. Visas are currently given only to the close family members, such as a wife, husband, and children, but not to aunts, brothers, cousins. Because of their temporary residency status, Chinese parents send their children born in Serbia to schools back in China. In fact, Serbian law does not provide permanent status for any foreigners. This is so even if Chinese nationals have been in Serbia for as long as 10 years. After 10 years, the immigration status is the same as the moment they first arrived. It is not accidental that at this point in time, at this specific moment, in this specific place, the mediators between the different groups at Block 70 are translators. The Serbian redundant worker compelled to accept a low-wage job as clerk sales. The Roma youth recently deported to Serbia from Germany. And the Chinese shopkeepers are all only able to speak to each other through a translator. Does the Roma youth with German deportation papers know that the Chinese woman for whom he works is experiencing a similar process of insecurity? Does the Serbian woman who has fled from Vukovar and is working in the kitchen for a Chinese restaurant know that the Roma man recently deported from Germany has memories of a movement of resistance? How can they speak together? In this place, the name migrant is almost premature. A Chinese merchant speaking through a translator laments that it's not even possible for him to consider himself a migrant. A migrant, he says, is someone who has rights. To name oneself a migrant is itself a political act, a form of resistance, a demand, a transformation of everyday life. Thank you.